Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Nadia Raymond, and on most days, on most normal Latino USA shows, I'm the person responsible for editing the stories you hear. But today, I'm guest hosting because this is a special episode. Marlon Bishop is also here with me.
Hello, Nadia.
Marlon, as you may know, is a producer here at Latino USA. He's written about music in Latin America for many, many years, and he made a discovery recently.
We're going to start today with the story of a rock song you definitely recognize.
Louie Louie was this popular song from the 1960s, right? It's a rock and roll classic.
This is Professor Roberto Avant Mir from El Paso, Texas. He's the author of a book on Latinos and rock called Rock the Nation. He goes by Bo.
So never in my wildest imagination would I have said that this has got Hispanic or Latino connections.
Louie Louie is kind of this classic rock anthem. Everyone knows it, right? And it's super rough around the edges. The lyrics make absolutely no sense.
I've actually never paid attention to the lyrics.
Well, he says Louie Louie and then a bunch of unintelligible garbled nonsense. The version of the song that we've all heard over and over again, the one by the Kingsmen, surprise, is not the original version. The Kingsmen got it from another version that was recorded in Los Angeles in 1957 by a guy named Richard Berry.
That's an R&B guy in the 1950s, in the late 1950s.
Wow, that's like almost identical, but way smoother.
This version was not a hit, but plot twist, Richard Berry's version wasn't the original either. Not exactly. Berry was part of an LA group called the Rhythm Rockers, which included some Filipino musicians, and there was this Latin song they used to cover at their show sometimes. Here's Bo.
Latin music was all the rage in the 1950s, right? It was extremely popular, everything from tango to Mexican music. So he borrows from this song, and the original song is called El Loco Cha-Cha.
Actually, to be precise, it was the Loco Cha-Cha-Cha, but who's counting? The song was by a guy named
René Touzé,
a Cuban bandleader from Miami.
And Richard Berry copies the riff, right? Not the song, but he copies the riff.
This sounds like the original one.
Once you hear it, it's also so obvious. It's like this classic Afro-Cuban riff. It like clearly belongs in this song. And you hear it over and over in Cuban music.
Richard Berry was an African-American combining Latin music and black R&B music and turning it into a rock and roll song.
That's crazy.
Think about how many millions of copies Louie Louie sold. And there we go. There's just this really short journey from a cha-cha mambo song to a like adolescent teen rock and roll song. It's just like,
phew. Yeah, and that song is so like, when I think of the classic rock sound of the 1950s, 60s, that is Louie Louie to me.
Exactly.
The guitar is, of course, the center of any rock and roll band from the 1950s to today. Here's Bo again.
We know that in the 1800s, if you look at who was playing the guitar in the United States, most people along the East Coast, which is where most of the United States was at the time, most people were playing the piano.
Meanwhile, out West,
you have cowboys, vaqueros playing guitars. And of course, the guitar gets introduced by vaqueros.
Vaqueros were the Mexican cowboys of the American West, which was, of course, mostly part of Mexico until the mid-1800s. And it's through these vaqueros that the guitar traveled to the South and became popular with black bluesmen, and eventually rock and roll bands.
And nowadays, we talk about the guitar as sort of this, you know, it's totally American thing for rock and roll, especially, and it's iconic for rock and roll.
And yet, without Mexico, there would be no guitar and probably no rock music as we know it.
And there are so many more examples, right? There's the mariachi trumpets that made their way into Johnny Cash's music, or the clave, for example, which influenced Bo Diddley's signature guitar rhythm that became the Bo Diddley beat.
And so that's the kind of thing we're talking about on our show today. The often unacknowledged but vital role Latinos have played in rock history up through today. Obviously, we can't cover everybody or the whole history in this 1 hour, but we've selected a few stories that help illustrate the very real impact Latinos have had in a genre where our presence has often been forgotten. We go next to the Southwest in the late 50s and early 60s, where the Latino influence in rock wasn't hidden at all.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
A number of Chicano artists and bands were making hits. There was Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, who did Wooly Bully.
There was Cannibal and the Headhunters with Night of a Thousand Dances.
And of course, there was teen rock and roll heartthrob sensation Ricardo Valenzuela. You may know him as Richie Valens.
Richie showed the country that Mexican-Americans could be music stars.
Once Richie was gone, he left some big shoes to fill. But there was someone who did step into his shoes, and almost his life. Reporter Shara Morris picks up the story.
It was February 3rd, 1959, the day the music died.
We interrupt this program for a special news bulletin. Three young singers who soared to the heights of show business on the current rock and roll craze were killed today in the crash of a light plane in an Iowa snow flurry. The singers were identified as Richie Valens, 17, Buddy Holly, 22, and J.P. Richardson, known professionally as the Big Bopper.
Chan Romero was 17, living in Billings, Montana, when he heard the news.
Oh, I was devastated. I was getting ready for school that morning and on TV and radio. I could not believe what I was hearing.
Part of the reason Chan was devastated was that he was a young Latino rocker, too, just like Richie. He'd already formed a band. And he had also written a song that was bound to get you dancing. I can't keep this hippie, hippie shake. Hippie, hippie shake. The song caught the attention of a local Montana DJ named Don Redfield. In fact, Don was the guy who first introduced Richie's music to Chan.
And he said, this guy here sounds just like you, or you sound like him. And it was Richie Valens singing his first big hit, Donna. Oh, Donna, oh, Donna. The other, on the flip side of that record, was La Bamba. Of course, I fell in love with the record, and we learned those songs. That was some of the first songs we learned.
Richie's death left a gaping hole in rock music. It also left music industry insiders searching for someone to carry on his legacy. That's when Don sent Chan's cut of Hippie Hippie Shake to Richie's manager, a guy named Bob Keen.
He said, I believe Chan is going to be the successor to Richie Valens because they have so much in common, not only sounding alike, but he said their heritage is about the same, Mexican, Indian, just so much in common.
Bob Keen flew Chan out to L.A. They recorded Hippie Hippie Shake in the same studio where Richie recorded his hits and with the same musicians.
Bob Keen probably thought, well, I'll use the same winning formula.
That's Mark Guerrero, another Latino rocker and Chan's good friend.
Same studio, same musicians. It worked before, it'll work again.
And the formula did work, for a while. Hippie Hippie Shake did well, especially in the UK and Australia. And several bands were covering it. The Swinging Blue Jeans, the Georgia Satellites, and some young blokes from Liverpool.
And now, Paul, would you suggest a number?
This is one that we used to do a long time ago at the Cavern, and I think it's one that most people know by now. It's called Hippie Hippie Shake.
For goodness sake, I got the hippie hippie shake.
The Beatles, live on BBC Radio in July 1963. Paul McCartney listed Chan as one of his early influences. Meanwhile, Bob Keen incorporated Chan so much into Richie's world that Chan almost embodied Richie. He introduced Chan to Richie's mother, Connie, and Connie invited him to live with their family for several months.
She wanted me to stay in Richie's room, and Richie still had all of his clothes in there that he had when he passed. Even the guitar that was in the airplane crash, it had a hard shell case. I was quite, you know, amazed that she would let me stay in there.
One morning, Chan was eating with Connie and her sister.
We were having breakfast. She had made breakfast for us, and she told her in Spanish, Dios me quitó un hijo y me trajo otro. God took my son and he brought me another one. That just very well blew me away.
But Chan's success in Richie's footsteps could only last so long, because Chan wasn't Richie Valens. Chan was a respected artist in his own right, but living in Richie's room, performing in Richie's studio, with Richie's bandmates, Chan literally didn't have the space to explore his own sound. which is something many Latinos were dealing with on a larger scale.
You know, when we talk about rock and roll, a lot of times we talk about the birth of rock and roll being this hybrid form of white country western music and black rhythm and blues.
That's Nicholas Centino, a Chicano pop culture scholar at UCLA.
And any influence that might be anything that's not white or black typically tends to get not paid as much attention to. And a part of that sort of, you know, third space that Latino artists fill also tend to get ignored or tend to get marginalized. And so we're allowed to have a Richie Valens or we're allowed to have a Chan Romero at a time.
What's sad is that even Richie didn't have the space to explore his own sound either, because he died when he was just 17. Who knows all the different ways his sound could have developed had he lived? And who knows how Chan would have flourished if he wasn't thrust into Richie's world? Some people might think of Chan as a one-hit wonder, but his life hasn't revolved around the pop charts. Chan stopped performing full-time in 1967 when he found Christianity. These days, you can find him doing local gigs or playing at church.
We still love music, and I write a lot of gospel now. And I did do an album not too long ago.
Chan's 74 now. He's got 12 kids, 48 grandkids, and 29 great-grandkids. He still has the same greaser pompadour, but it's a little thinner now. At one point, he opened an auto body shop to bring in some extra cash. He's thought about getting back into music full-time, but for the most part, he's content. And every now and again, he does get out there to shake his hips.
Thanks to Shara Morris for that story. You know, this idea that there's only enough space for one teen Latino heartthrob, it's sort of like, you know how in Aziz Ansari's TV show Master of None, he has like this whole rant about how there can't be more than one Indian actor. Now it's no longer just a show, it's an Indian show. It's kind of like that, except with rock.
And in general, there is some space for Latinos in rock and roll, but not too much, because rock music is white and black. It's the country,
right,
and the blues.
And if there's too many Latinos, like, the narrative explodes. Too complicated.
Exactly.